It's Friday the 13th. There you go, Clarkie. Friday the 13th of May. The Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. We're at Scone Race Club. Morning to everyone, wherever you're listening. And, well, Scone Cup Day today. It's been raining steadily, annoyingly, for probably 24 hours. Nothing heavy, but just that little annoying rain. Pup, great to be back up here in the Upper Hunter.
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. Yep. Awesome afternoon and night yesterday. Beautiful feed at the cottage. Hotel looked after us once again. Did you get your little care package? Your little bottle of wine and couple of cookies?
Outstanding. Glenn and Kel look after us.
Honestly, yep. We've been treated like gold. But yeah, nice to be here, apart from the rain. But yeah, and then speaking to a few people last night, they are pumped about today and tomorrow at the track.
Morning to you, Lozza.
Morning, boys. Yeah, great to be up here in Scone again. Hopefully the rain might stay away, although it hasn't rained particularly strongly. It's just sort of
spitting down.
But no, it should be a wonderful day up here for the races. Looking forward to Magic Round. Of course, you've got the Bulldogs and Knights kicking off at 6 o'clock, and then Manly taking on the Brisbane Broncos. And I think this weekend, Middo, there could be a few upsets. Mm. And I know you went out on a limb yesterday.
Oh,
you
why?
Tipped a few upsets, and I think that might be the play if you're looking to have a bet. But, yeah, a lot of these games are hard to pick. We're looking forward to the one tomorrow night, the Melbourne Storm up against Penrith. It's a shame that Ryan Pappenhausen and Remus Smith aren't there. But, you know, Penrith, they had their first loss of the season last week against the Eels. The Eels, of course, take on the Roosters on Sunday afternoon. There's some mouth-watering clashes, and it should be a wonderful week up there in a wonderful weekend, I should say, up there in Brisbane.
Why no footy last night? I missed it.
Didn't work.
I know Magic Round.
Didn't work Thursday night.
Really?
Because you want to make it a festival. You want to have two games, three games. So if you just had one last night, probably dilutes.
I missed it a lot.
Yeah, I missed it. But and there was no one that turned up. They didn't have the big crowd that they expected on the Thursday night.
Okay.
But tonight...
Yeah, monster.
At 6 o'clock kickoff, people, you know, we're at Suncorp Stadium. You leave the city, you can walk.
Friday, it's perfect.
Friday night, and then Saturday sold out. So tonight will be close to a sellout with the Broncos playing. Saturday's already sold out. And Sunday afternoon, if it's a good day, they'll get at least 40,000.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a great weekend, and we'll sink our teeth into a few games soon. But a huge night last night, or a huge day it is today, for Australian rugby, fellas. World Cup hosting rights confirmed. So we've got the Men's World Cup 2027, the Women's in 2029. This will be the third time, obviously, hosting the Rugby World Cup back in 87, the initial World Cup, which we co-hosted with New Zealand. And then in 2003, and by the way, the USA was awarded hosting rights for the 2031 World Cup and the 2033 Women's World Cup. But we've got the British and Irish Lions here in 2025 as well. So a huge financial windfall is coming for a sport that, you know, let's face it, at times we've thought it's been completely on its knees. But all of a sudden, there's some light on the horizon, plenty of it, you would think. When you get the Lions coming here and then a World Cup 2 years later, that's massive for Australia.
Well, everyone was spoken to. They've said that Rugby Australia needs this, don't they? There's been so much talk about where the competition is, where rugby is in the country. We're seeing the Aussie teams obviously perform better this season. But, yeah, I think in general the sport needed a little booster or a little kick in the guts like this. So congratulations to Rugby Australia. Well done. Well deserved as well. Again, nobody would be surprised and nobody would be disappointed. There's not too many events, sporting events, that Australia doesn't do well. And you've got no doubt this will be exactly the same.
No, well, you look at what they're able to achieve out of it. Obviously, you know, it brings an economic benefit to Sydney and Australia. But the amount of money that the game will be able to generate to put back into grassroots and then obviously keep their top line players. They're talking about $100 million being pumped back into the game, which is an enormous investment. And that'll help grow participation and help them with their finances because I think they had a war chest of, I don't know, 40, 50 million.
Yeah.
Was it 40 million? And they blew it.
And they
wasted it, and that's one of the reasons why the game has been struggling and they haven't been able to compete with the other codes in this country. So it's a big win for Australian Rugby Union. And, you know, they're coming into what looks as though it's going to be a good period for them. You can only go off what we've seen in Super Rugby this season and what they've been able to do over the last couple of weeks against the Kiwi sides. So they're you know, competing really well. They're winning games. And, you know, if we can have a strong test series against England and perform well in the Bledisloe against New Zealand this year, geez, it looks good for next year's World Cup.
Yeah.
And we'll speak to Matt Burke later this morning, Channel 10 extraordinaire and Wallaby great, and get his reaction to that fantastic news overnight. That bid team, they left no stone unturned. They had some heavy, heavy hitters involved to make sure that it got over the line. But Australia to host the World Cup in 2027. Now, big news yesterday at GWS, Leon Cameron and the club agreed, well, they agreed on Tuesday to end Cameron's 8.5-year reign there as coach of the Giants. He'll coach a final game against Carlton on Sunday. And, Loz, I think overall you've got to mark it a big positive, Leon Cameron's tenure there at the Giants, taking that club to a grand final and a couple of more prelims, one prelim in particular, that epic against the Western Bulldogs in 2016, which really could have gone either way for them. But overall, considering where that club was and where it is now as far as performances are concerned, raging success, Leon Cameron.
I think he's done a tremendous job, you know. Unfortunately, it just hadn't worked out for him this year. But take nothing away from Leon Cameron. He's done a mighty job. Took over from the great Kevin Sheedy. He's been at the club for ten seasons. And, you know, he's been able to develop these young footballers into good young men. And, you know, there's been plenty of talent at his disposal. Unfortunately, he hasn't won a competition. But, you know, to take them to two grand finals and final series, they're hard to win. But Leon Cameron, he can walk away, his head held high. And now the race is on to find his replacement. And, you know, if you're the Giants, there's only one sort of target, and that's Alistair Clarkson. Absolutely. That's the man you've got on your radar. You've got to try and do everything in your power to try and attract him to the club. You've got to sell Sydney. You've got to sell the Giants. And you've got to sell him the team that he's working with. And, you know, I think it'd be an exciting opportunity for Clarkson to get to Sydney and take on the Swans, create a great rivalry, and that'd be great for the code here in this city.
And Clarkson has indicated that he wants to go to a club that's ready to win. He doesn't necessarily want to start, say, like Paul Roos did when he went back to Melbourne a few years ago, which ended up being very successful as well when he handed the reins to Simon Goodwin. But Clarkson just wants to have his ear off now, or, you know, hasn't indicated or given a complete indication he's going to come back next year. But with this job opening, his indication is he wants a side that can win now. And the Giants are that side, Loz. They've got so much quality.
Yeah, and I know the Giants are putting together a coaching subcommittee, and, you know, they'll work out where they want to go and what they want to do. But surely, if you're a football club, you start that conversation now before the subcommittee get together, don't you? And you just make the phone call and say, Alistair, are you interested in coming to the Giants? And if you are,
what's your price?
You are our number one target, and we want to get you to the club. What's it going to take? And then you try and do a deal as quickly as you possibly can without going through a process of, oh, rightio, we'll interview five or six people. I don't understand that sometimes when you've got a guy in your sights, he's a premiership, four-time premiership winning coach, arguably the greatest of the era.
Don't ask him to apply.
No.
And chase him.
You go and chase him. Make sure that he understands that he's the number one target. The job's his if he wants it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And, well, his manager, James Henderson, in Melbourne has indicated that just pretty much every club is, well, not every club, but half the AFL has contacted him.
That's fine. That's not a drama. But you go and sit down and say, listen, what's it going to take? You give me a number and we'll tell you. We'll tell you whether we can do it or not. And I would say whatever number he comes up with, the Giants
will find it.
Will be able to find it.
Yep.
And if he's keen on coming, it won't be. It won't. If he's coming to the Giants, it'll be about the list, and he will be looked after financially.
Yeah.
Speaking of coaches overseas, it has been confirmed in England, Clarkey, Brendan McCullum, great New Zealand player, of course. He's been coaching the Kolkata Knight Riders, which he'll be stepping down from at the end of this Indian Premier League because he has signed a 4-year deal to be England's new test coach. Now, he's never coached long form cricket, obviously played it, but he's going to step into the hot seat, and they've got a big summer ahead of them. Firstly, he's got his first test is going to be against New Zealand, and then they've got I think they've got that catch up match against India, and then a series against South Africa. And this England side under all sorts of pressure after a very, very poor Ashes series, a loss in the Caribbean. But new captain, new coach, a somewhat of a dream team. Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum.
Well, oh, well done to Brendan as well. Great appointment from England. I think he'll do a great job. He's a wonderful guy. He was a very good player. Aggressive captain when he played, so I'd imagine his coaching would be quite similar. 4 years, long time. So good deal from his perspective. And Test cricket only. So, yeah, look, I think only time will tell. I think you're going to see some people who will be really positive about this and will think that Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum, their two styles are very similar in regards to the way they played the game. Aggressive approach to the game, look to take the game forward. And then there'll be the other side where people will say, is that too strong in one direction? Do you need your coach and captain to be a little bit more different and have that conversation and find the place in the middle? But, look, I think Baz will fit in fine. He's a great fella and he'll find a way to get the best out of these England players. Just that balance, really. Who's going to do the one-day job now? What is Baz's role in and around? Like, is he head coach? Does he sit above the other coach, the short form coach? Because again,
this is why
I guess for Australian cricket, I've said for a bit of time that I feel like our team now, the Australian team, probably needs the one captain across all three formats, because there's so much cricket, because there's so much short form cricket, because there's, look at this season, it's all 2020 in preparation for a T20 World Cup, and then in the blink of an eye, we go into February and it becomes really test orientated. So the one captain can actually speak to the coach, selectors, CEO even, or high performance manager and say, right, what's our plan, even if it's short-term goals, for the resting? For, okay, right now we're giving guys off test cricket, but we need them to play 2020 cricket. Or, come January, February, they've got to play every test and they can miss the short form. It's just that balance is really hard. And I think that's probably going to be England's greatest challenge, because Brendan is going to be very strong in his ways. Ben Stokes, by the sounds of it, I think has got the coach that he wanted. I know Stokes and Owen Morgan, very close. Owen Morgan and Brendan McCullum are best friends. So I think Stokes, he would have pushed to get McCullum as well. So now, if those two are getting on really well in the test series, what happens then when you go into the short form? You've got a different captain and a different coach. It's going to be an interesting balance. But I think courageous appointment, but I think good appointment for England.
How does it work as a cricket coach? I mean, in rugby league, you do a lot of video work.
Yep.
You do a lot of analysis on opposition teams, weakness, strengths, and all that type of stuff. As a cricket coach, do you sit down as a bowling group and work on how you're going to bowl a certain batsman?
Yeah.
Batters work out their techniques, or is it a lot more out there on the pitch? When you're bowling, coaches standing behind.
It's both. We do a lot of analysis. Like, you'll have somebody on that computer the whole time. So as a player, you can go and get any footage you want, but you're doing meetings regularly, bowling meeting, batting meeting, come together as a team. I think...
Too much?
Most probably over a season. But individually, you probably feel like you might, some players need more information than others as well. So that's why I think these days there's so much footage and info you can get. I think the key is to leave that door open for any player and everyone will differ. The key to a coach, I think the best cricket coach is the best man manager.
Yeah.
His job is to get the best out of all individuals.
Because I've always found the more you give someone information, the more confusing
sometimes it
makes it. And it's like, tackle technique, for instance, for us. You're trying to talk to people to get in close to target, to get your hands up, to bend late, dip, and all these type of words that you use.
Mm. Confuse people.
Tackling has to come naturally to you. If you're going in to make a tackle, and all of a sudden you're thinking about, right, oh, I've got to be in here, I've got to get my legs in tight, you can stuff them mentally
because
they start to worry about, oh, am I doing this right, instead of just it coming naturally. Because you've tackled as a kid, it's just some basic things you have to tighten up.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you haven't got that right stance, but you've still got a decent technique, if I can't fix it, you've just got to let him go with it.
Some players, and I say this with the most respect, but there used to be some players, all through my career, where you would say, their dumbness, and I mean this respectfully, is their greatest strength. So leave them alone. Don't try and fill their head with technique, structure, roots. Like, don't overcomplicate it. Just, you know, why they're such good batsmen, for example, is because they don't think about anything else. Yeah. The bowler bowls it, and they think about hitting the ball. So I think, again, each individual is very different, and that's the coach's job to work out who needs more, who needs less, who doesn't like looking at their own vision, who would rather feel it at training rather than go and sit for an hour and study their technique on a camera. So, yeah, Brendan will be he'll be faced with a lot of different challenges. There's no doubt about it. And again, straight away, I don't know how much time Baz has spent in the UK as well playing county cricket or learning the culture, the England culture. That's going to take some time as well. So I would imagine, you know, playing in England's very different to playing in Australia. I'd imagine playing in New Zealand's different again. So that's going to take some time as well. But England are struggling. They're ranked 6th in the world. They had to be courageous and make a bold decision. I think they've done that, and I think it's a good decision.
Now, we've got Adam Pengilly coming up shortly after the news, but we've got the headlines at the moment, and cups bring mix of joy, caution. He's on the back page of The Australian, the back page of the Sydney Morning Herald. We've got It's Official, Australia win right to host World Cups. And on the back page of The Telegraph, set world on fire, rugby wins another chance to shine on global stage. So if you're just tuning in, the big news overnight, it was confirmed that we are hosting the World Cup, the Men's World Cup in 2027, the Women's in 2029. And on the back page of The Australian, just the undertone there. Don't stuff it up like we did after 2003 when we blew the huge windfall that Australian rugby had. And already the CEO has come out and said, look, we're going to be obviously very careful with the way that those funds are allocated going forward after and learn the lessons of what happened in the years post-2003. But we'll have Berkey on later this morning, and he'll break it down for us and what this means for Australian rugby, particularly at this point in time. But also back page of the Telegraph, Magic 8 Ball, and there's Tom Trbojevic there ahead of Manly up against Brisbane tonight. And Loz, it's a year anniversary for the crackdown, which yielded 14 sin bins and 3 send-offs last year. So that certainly wasn't great viewing. And on the back page of The Australian, the headline is, referees will let the magic flow.
Yeah, and I think they overreacted last year and they recalibrated towards the end of the year. I don't think anyone enjoyed what happened last year. I don't think anyone enjoyed Magic Round, given what was on display. And thankfully, they've toned it down, the referees. And, you know, I think, you know, they're learning again, you know, what's a head-eye tackle in terms of a send-off, sin bin. We can always argue about what we think should happen, but they're out there, they're under pressure to make the right decisions. Last year, they got it horribly wrong. This year, yep, you know, we could sit here and say, yeah, they should have been sent off or someone should have been in sin bin instead of being sent off. But I think overall, they've done a decent job.
Also, back page of The Australian, Clarkson on top of Giants coach wish list. And speaking before about Leon Cameron, he and the club, they've agreed to part ways after this weekend.
What do you think about that?
Farewell game? No, I think that's fine. It's big in the AFL. It's a sign of respect.
And no, resigning now? Well, they haven't... Like, not wait, like...
Oh, read what, between the lines. It's,
he's
it's
been
a,
asked.
It's a mutual decision where the club would have said, mate, it's not working. What do you think? And then, honestly, you'd say, oh, yeah, I know where this is going.
But does this transition now, does it make any difference to the Giants season? Do you think it changed, like by him resigning now or staying head coach until the end of the year, does it make any significant difference to their season, do you think?
Yeah, I think it would.
You think it will?
Yeah,
okay.
I think it would. If you've got a coach that's just coaching till the end and then going, and if your season is going downhill.
Get out now. Rather than finish your season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think the players then sense, what's the point?
So then why the... And you're okay with, like, the token game now? Like,
I'm okay with that, yeah. Okay. Especially
because
someone,
he's been a long-term coach, had a lot
servant,
of success. Lot of,
yep. Your part ways, as well as you possibly can.
Okay.
I think you treat people with respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's how I'd operate.
Would you want...
Well, it's up to him. You'd say to the
if
Leo,
you want it,
yeah,
you've got that option.
You've got that option.
Yeah, okay.
And then it's up to the coach to decide.
But like
I think as an administrator, I think I would offer that to a coach.
Yeah, okay. Right thing to do.
Yeah, just say,
and he's earned that.
Yeah, he's been there 10 years.
Yeah, he's been brilliant.
You know, a couple of grand finals. And, you know, he's developed a lot of these young players.
He's been
players.
Pretty honest, hasn't he? Through the last few weeks particularly, I think he's, well, even not re-signing start of the year and making it clear he wants to see how he feels. I think he's been pretty straight up.
I think it was last week when they played Geelong. I think in that press conference, I think he realised his time was up because he said, we played boring today.
Yeah, okay.
We played some boring football. And when you're hearing that from a coach, it's never a good sign, in particular when you've been under pressure and you need to win games.
You're the one that's the coach as well, and your team's playing like that. There's some sort of accountability there as well, surely. Yeah.
So I think he knew then that his time was coming to an end.
Back page as well of the Daily Telegraph. Big story in racing yesterday. Waller's au revoir to a star. So very elegant. Wow, this is a bit of a bombshell. Will be transferred to French trainer Francis-Henri Graffard. The ownership group conceded that, well, basically at this point in her career, Very Elegant needs 2,400 metres plus to be at or near her best, and that she'll be naturally weighted out of the cups here in Australia, the Caulfield and Melbourne Cup. So there's more options in Europe, so they're going to take it to this French trainer and potentially set her for the Arc de Triomphe later this year. 16 of 38 races she's won, 11 Group 1s, nearly $15 million in prize money, Loz, and heading to Europe. So that's a big call, isn't it, from the owners?
She's a surprise. But, you know, they're in charge of the horse. They own the horse. They can do whatever they want with her, but she's been a beauty. Very elegant. She is a superstar. Won the Melbourne Cup last year, but now she's got another target that she wants to try and achieve.
Cash is king, Loz.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a famous race as well. They want to try and get the best out of her, and if they think that's the best way to go, then they're entitled to make that decision.
Yeah, this will be fascinating how this plays out, because just the wider implications for Australian racing and the fact that, well, basically the owners are coming out and saying there's not enough races for her. You know, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, can we do something about this? But all our breeding, here we are in the Hunter, and... it's Scone, the horse capital, and let's face it, all our breeding, well, most of our breeding is tailored towards sprint races, and the programming is that way accordingly. So
I suppose, though, if you start to lose a few more like Very Elegant, you might have to look at maybe trying to introduce a few more races.
It's an interesting issue. I wonder if, you know, this will perhaps entice some more programming of staying races in Australia, seeing a champion. When we watch a champion like this, the owner's going, well, there's no races here for us.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
It's basically the Tancred, 2,400 metre weight for age. Yeah.
As far as I'm sure it's concerned. Something they've considered, but they probably just haven't prioritised it. And with Very Elegant, maybe now moving on, they might look at it again and go, well, that's something, there's a hole in the market here. Let's try and, you know, get some more races here so we can keep those staying horses. But, you know, if it's just a one-off and, you know, you're still seeing the best horses race here, I don't know whether there's that appetite, but it might be something that they look to. I know that, you know, well, you'd never say never with Peter Volandis. I mean, you know, if he thinks he can make it work, he'll make it work.
Now, the Racing League deliver Australia's best ownership experience with their horses currently boasting a 31% winning strike rate. Emerging two-year-old Luna Rocks looks to be special. She bolted in last start in town. She's on the way. Well, she's here. The Listed Woodlands Classic tomorrow at the Scone Standalone. And you can still own your share of Luna Rocks. Just go to trl.net. You can buy us at the New South Wales Tycoon 7-horse racing team for just $260. Own today and join the winners at trl.net.